Hi, welcome back to Wickedness. I'm Lenny.
And I'm Matt.
And I know we missed last week, but it's because I had COVID.
COVID, second time.
Matt told me not to say anything. He's like, stop giving him excuses about why we didn't record. Just go. And I was like, no, I don't give a fuck. I had COVID, so I couldn't record. And it has messed me up this time. Like, I am really irritated by it because I work out. So today I was doing my spin class, and towards the end of my, it was a 30-minute freaking spin class. It wasn't even that hard. This one wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so freaking out of breath and dying.
Yeah, that's not good.
No, COVID has messed me up. And when I was running the other day, screwed me up. I couldn't run. I wasn't pacing the way, like, it's messed me up. This time around, sucked. First time around, not so bad.
My runs mess me up because I smoke cigars here and there.
Well, I don't smoke.
It's self-induced, but
I'm not a smoker.
No, I don't think they really do mess me up too much. It's just I'm out of shape, so I'm getting back in shape. So I really don't think it isn't. Well, you know, while you were off having COVID on your vacation.
It wasn't a vacation.
You made some things, I think, while you were kind of like.
Well, the week before I got COVID.
Oh, that's right. It was the week before.
Yeah,
never mind.
I didn't get to record last week because I had COVID. But the week before I had COVID, I took advantage of, I wasn't on vacation, but work was slow. So I moved my laptop, my work laptop, into my crafting room, and I made like 14 hats and a few cups and mugs for an upcoming Bigfoot trip we're taking to Beaver's Bend.
Heck yeah, because we love Bigfoot.
It was fun last year when we went. Like, we had a really good time. So we're looking forward to this trip too. And the cabin we got for this year is so pretty in pictures.
Nice.
I can't wait to see.
It's legit.
Yeah. Yeah, this is going to be awesome. If you guys haven't been to Beaver's Bend or you've never heard of it, you should check it out. Go ahead and Google it and look up some cabins and stuff. They have some really, really nice ones. And then go ahead and book your trip and go because you're going to love it.
Yeah, it's awesome. Mm-hmm. It's a nice spot.
Yep. And then some more fun stuff is our dog, our German short hair pointer. His name is Huck. It fits him. If you don't know what a German short hair pointer, GSP, looks like, you should Google them, and then you'll know why we named him Huck, because it's like a dirt-to-dirt dog.
He's a bird dog.
We left him out of his kennel for 20 minutes while I ran to the store. Matt went and picked up our granddaughters, and during that time, he was going to be home, right, like before I got home. And he comes home to the chair in our living room, totally eaten. Cushion was everywhere and stuff, so he sends me a picture. And then few days later, I'm in the bathroom doing my hair before we go out for the evening, and he eats the couch.
Yeah.
So we had to replace the chair. We had a twin to it. We had a matching chair, so we were able to just move the one in our room into the living room, get rid of the one he ripped up. But the couch, we had to go buy a cheap ass couch from Big Lots.
Because we had couch covers coming along for both the couch and the love seat just to
try and protect it from the dogs jumping on it and stuff all the time. But
getting out of that puppy phase, because they're both a year old and still going through that. And I know most of you, if you're listeners, you're like, heck no, I wouldn't let that happen, which we don't want it to happen. And we're like, man, if he continues, we're going to have to.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about rehoming him because we love him.
Yeah, and I don't think it'll get to that point, but
we have spent so much money on this damn dog.
Yeah.
We have spent money on training and time. We have replaced. He's eaten two pairs of my glasses, so I've had to buy new glasses. Just random stuff like remote controls that we've had to replace remote controls, just random stuff. But the big things he ate, he is our own personal Marley from Marley and Me. He ate the dang couch and a chair.
Right.
In a matter of a couple of days.
Yes. It's like, what the heck?
Matt tries really, really hard to like wear him out and stuff. He takes him for walks and things like that. It's not like we keep this active dog kenneled up and like cooped up all day or anything. He gets his exercise. He's out all day because I work from home. So he's hanging out with me all day long. But He is Destructo Dog. That's his nickname, and he lives up to it.
Yes, he does.
So pray for us while we try to get this guy under control so that we can keep him.
Right? For sure.
So anyway, that's been our last 2 weeks, COVID and Destructo Dog. Fun.
That's exciting.
Yeah, let's jump into part three of the Green River Killer here, Gary Ridgway, because I'm sorry, you guys. I know having a gap week where you're waiting on the third one to come out is not cool. So I apologize for that. The last two episodes, we introduced him to you, talked about who he was, who he murdered, and how he murdered his victims. We talked about how he tricked them, how he got them to relax around him, and ended up last week's episode, or the week before's episode, by telling you about his one known survivor who took 2 years to come forward with her story.
Mm-hmm.
But I totally understand why she did. She didn't want to get in trouble for her profession. And I imagine that's a very real fear for prostitutes. And there are probably many women in this line of work who don't come forward when they're attacked. And it's, and it's honestly sad that that's how the world is. But I can't blame her. I can't say that I'd be like, oh yeah, let me tell you about this guy who tried to beat me up while I was getting him to pay me for a blowjob. Like, this isn't something you are going to go to the cops for.
Right. No, I mean, would they really listen either?
Right. Well,
this guy tried to beat me up. Okay. All right. Well,
And back in the late 70s, early 80s, or, you know, I'm pretty sure it's still that way today too. We look down on prostitution.
Mm-hmm.
For a reason, but we look down on it. And so I think, you know, there's still that stigma. If a woman is attacked while performing prostitution, they're probably going to be like, you deserved it. You were there. You put yourself in that position, which is sad, but I can see that being the case. So she finally came forward and told her story and was really instrumental in putting him away. So let's talk about how he got caught. If you remember Rebecca Gargway, the surviving victim, she identified him in December of 1984. So there was a task force that was started in the early 1980s working on the Green River Killer case and conducting investigations, just focusing on these cases, knowing there was a serial killer out there. So in February 1985, a couple of years after Rebecca had identified and described Gary as her attacker, the task force questioned him. He admitted to picking her up, but he said he only choked her because she bit him and Rebecca didn't want to pursue charges. So it was dropped.
Okay, so he said, she said.
Right, and they dropped the charges.
Okay.
So the most notable members of this task force were Robert Keppel and Dave Reichert, who interviewed Ted Bundy several times in 1984 discussing the Green River case.
Yeah, I remember. Didn't we kind of talk about that?
We did. Yeah. That's why I want to point that out. They didn't get any actual leads during these interviews, but they did get Ted to admit to some unsolved crimes. And then there was FBI agent John E. Douglas, who profiled the Green River Killer and wrote several papers on him. This investigation was considered to be one of the longest and largest serial murder investigations in the U.S. in U.S. history. And it took about 20 years to catch this guy.
Man, yeah. You know, it'd be interesting to read those papers and look at those papers and do a side-by-side analysis of what the Green, who he was, and just kind of all the...
Like the actual profile?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be interested.
It'd be kind of neat to see how close
they were.
Right.
Yeah, that'd be really cool.
Or do you think sometimes that the profiling is like going to see somebody read your future? I'm seeing a man in your life. And you've known this man, right? You've known him. And you're like, yeah. What, you know, I mean, just kind of, I don't know. I feel like sometimes the profiles, you can kind of go, okay,
I'm pretty sure it's all a generalization. No, like they're just deducing things, like their victimology and things like that. There's a lot that goes into it. I read the book Mindhunter. It's actually really interesting, but
And I wouldn't call it junk science at all.
No, but I'm pretty sure it's just, you know how you can read some people?
Yeah.
You know if they're lying, you know what their tells are, things like that. I think it's a lot of that, but without having the person stand in front of you. So what they have to read these people on and come up with these profiles with is their victims. They have to say, and like the time of day they're doing things and stuff like that, and how, and what have survivors or witnesses said about this person?
Yeah.
Do they drive a station wagon or do they drive a little mini, or, you know, a lot of that goes into it. So I think more than fortune telling, I think it just has to do with
powers of
deduction.
Well, that, and from time to time when you've seen, you know, serial killers, they could be a female or male, most definitely male. They could be different colors.
Most definitely male, most of the time.
Most of the time.
Most of the time male.
Most definitely.
They're all men.
They're all men. But most of the time, they are men. They are white, let's say. Mm-hmm. I mean, so there's, but that's not the case for everyone.
Right.
So, but it is interesting.
Mm-hmm. So the task force was reduced and built back up a few times with Dave Reichert being the lead investigator the entire time. He never left the task force. And the investigation actually went nationwide, looking at potential suspects everywhere. In January of 1984, King County Sheriff's Office formed a joint task force with several other agencies called the Green River Task Force.
That's creative.
I know, right? And it included, of course, the King County Sheriff's Office, the Port of Seattle Police, Seattle Police, Pierce County Sheriff's Office, Washington State Patrol, the FBI, and the Washington State Attorney General's Office, which I thought was weird that the Attorney General's Office was involved. I didn't know that they did investigations, but
yeah.
This task force went to crazy careful lengths to find evidence and try to link a suspect. So they were coming up with a paper trail, of course, because that's what they do, right? But more than that, they had detectives collecting birds' nests, animal feces, searching on hands and knees with magnifying glasses in the areas that they found victims to try to find any type of evidence that might be the key to the whole thing. That's how desperate they were getting.
Yeah.
And the Washington State Patrol Crime Lab is the one who got Gary's saliva and hair samples that ended up being the key, but they didn't know it in 1987.
Okay.
Detectives were hopeful that the DNA evidence would be the key, but the developments back then weren't good enough. And so they had detectives keeping a close eye on DNA analysis developments and changes over the years in case they would be able to use it. And in this case, it paid off.
Mm-hmm.
So in April of 2001, Dave Reichert, who was elected as the sheriff of King County in 1997, formed a team to do an in-depth evidence review of the case. In September of 2001, the Washington State Crime Lab matched the DNA evidence to Gary Ridgway, finally revealing who their killer was. And it was kind of crazy for them because they're like, we interviewed this guy. He was a suspect way back when.
Yeah, I wonder how often that happens too.
I'm pretty sure a lot.
I mean, yeah.
So Gary was actually arrested for soliciting a prostitute twice before he was known to be the Green River killer. Once in 1982 and then again in 2001, which I find funny because he was arrested for the killings in 2001. He actually became a Green River killer suspect in 1983, really early on in the investigation, but he took a polygraph and passed in 1984. So they just filed him away until April 7th, 1987, when they decided to take hair and saliva samples from him.
Do you think these guys, when they take these polygraphs, because they're so, I don't know, immune to emotion, that it doesn't really phase their heart rates and things that go up? They're like, whatever.
It's possible.
I wonder about that. Is it even a thing to even do a polygraph?
Well, I don't even rely on polygraphs. Let me tell you, if someone said, I need you to do a polygraph for me, I'm going to freak out. I am innocent of everything ever. But I'm going to freak out.
Right.
My heart rate's going to be up. I'm going to be like, what is this machine going to tell them? Am I going to end up in jail for something I didn't do? That's me. So I just don't think that they're reliable because I would be super nervous.
Well, and I think that would be inconclusive because of it would just be too much. So I would read it like,
no, I'm glad you're an expert.
I used to do it in my former life.
Okay.
I was a polygraph guy. No big deal.
I would go to prison for something I didn't do because I wouldn't be able to control that crap. I'd be so scared, even though I'm a good girl. So these samples were finally analyzed and compared to DNA samples from the victims, and this led to an arrest warrant. He was at work at the Kent truck painting factory on November 30th, 2001, when police arrived to arrest him. So could you imagine how embarrassing that would be to get arrested at work?
Oh, yeah. That would be embarrassing.
But if you're a killer, I don't know. I guess if you're guilty of anything, getting arrested is just whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So his initial charges only included four women. But when they found where he worked and linked paint samples to three more victims, he was charged with seven to begin with. So at least at this point, police know they have the right guy, and now they have to get all their evidence lined up and match it to him somehow. It takes almost 2 years to make progress and start interviewing Gary and showing him what they knew. So I find this one interesting because most of the serial killer cases we've covered so far all went to trial. His didn't.
Really?
He never went to trial.
What?
Yeah. He copped. Well, let's just talk about it. So in August 2003,
mm-hmm.
Gary was moved from he was kept in the prison, right? But he was moved from a maximum security prison to an undisclosed location. And it was reported that his lawyers were working on a plea deal to keep him from being executed in exchange for his confession.
Okay.
So on November 5th, 2003, Gary entered a guilty plea to 48 murders.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm. This was part of the plea bargain he had agreed to in June of 2003. So he would be spared the death penalty and would provide details and help police by taking them to the remains of his victims.
Isn't that wild, too, to remember where?
Yeah, so there was no need for a trial because he entered this plea and confessed and said he's guilty.
Okay.
So in a letter that went with his plea deal, he explained that he had murdered all the women inside King County, Washington, but he had transported two women across state lines to dump them in Oregon so he could throw off police. And I'm going to read some pieces of that letter. He made comments like he was quoted by the Associated Press as part of what, you know, part of this was, and the prosecutor read it. I killed 48 women listed in the state's second amended information. In most cases, when I killed these women, I did not know their names. Most of the times I killed them the first time I met them, and I do not have a good memory of their faces. I killed so many women, I have a hard time keeping them straight. I have reviewed information and discovery about each of the murders with my attorneys, and I am positive that I killed each one of the women charged in the second information. I killed them all in King County. I killed most of them in my house near Military Road. And I killed a lot of them in my truck not far from where I picked them up. I killed some of them outside. I remember leaving each woman's body in the place where she was found. I have discussed with my attorneys the common scheme or plan aggravating circumstances charged in all of these murders. I agree that each of the murders I committed was part of a common scheme or plan. The plan was I wanted to kill as many women I thought were prostitutes as I possibly could. I picked prostitutes as my victims because I hate most prostitutes and I did not want to pay them for sex. I also picked prostitutes as victims because they were easy to pick up without being noticed. I knew they would not be reported missing right away and might never be reported missing. I picked prostitutes because I thought I could kill as many of them as I wanted without getting caught. Another part of my plan was where I put the bodies of these women. Most of the time, I took the women's jewelry and their clothes to get rid of any evidence and make them harder to identify. I placed most of the bodies in groups, which I call clusters. I did this because I wanted to keep track of all the women I killed. I like to drive by the clusters around the county and think about the women I placed there. I usually use the landmark to remember a cluster and the woman I placed there. Sometimes I killed and dumped a woman intending to start a new cluster and never returned because I thought I might get caught putting more women there, end quote.
Wow.
Right? So those are his own words.
Yeah.
And can I just say in some of these, like, he just has no emotion. None at all.
Yeah.
So, like, when he said that he, like the first one, he's like, I killed 48 women listed in the state's Second Amendment information. Like, he's just, he's looking at his charges. He's looking at the victim list they gave him. And he's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, I did that. Like, yeah. It doesn't even matter to him.
No.
And he's like, I didn't even know their names.
Yeah.
You're a piece of shit.
Yeah, pretty you're, much.
I mean, I you're mean, already you are. A piece of shit because you're a serial killer. But you don't even know their names. At least I can say that some, most of the serial killers we've covered did know their victims' names.
Yeah.
And then he's also making comments about he doesn't even have a good memory of their faces. And he had so many victims, it was hard for him to keep straight. This man is cold.
Yeah, he's cold. To the but, core. I would think after I'm killing all these people, trying to remember, it would be a blur.
I'm sure it would be a blur. And I'm sure that you would forget a few. But this is why so many serial killers are known to keep trophies, which he was odd because he didn't, right?
Right.
But so many of them keep trophies because they do remember them. They mean, these victims mean something to them. Yeah. And in their own sick way.
Mm-hmm.
But for Gary Ridgway,
it didn't mean anything.
These women didn't mean shit to him.
I wonder where he put their other belongings if he tried to keep it, made it harder for them to find out who this person was. Like, what were you doing with that? Were you burning it? Were you throwing it out somewhere else?
What do you mean their other belongings?
Like their clothes, he said. He was talking about how he would, wasn't it?
Well, I know that he tied a lot of their clothing around them.
I took the women's jewelry and clothes to get rid of any evidence to make it harder to identify them.
Oh, yeah, he said that, but not all of them. Some of them, he just tied it around their necks or their feet or something, or left it scattered next to them. Like, it really didn't matter to him.
Yeah.
And I know in one of his interviews I was reading, he mentioned the jewelry. He said he got off on, like, if he left a ring or a bracelet from one of his victims in a bathroom,
mm-hmm.
and then his wife would be wearing it, one of his wives would find it in there and put it on.
Really?
And so he'd see them wearing this ring or this bracelet and think,
that's weird.
Yeah. Like, if I come in our bathroom and I find a ring or a bracelet or something laying on the counter,
yeah.
I'm not just going to put that shit on. I'm going to be like, where the hell did this come from?
Exactly.
Whose is this?
Right.
Why do you have it? How to get in our bathroom? Like, there's going to be so many questions. I'm not just putting it on.
No.
No.
Oh, I got that for you, babe. I did. I took it out the box.
I mean, and who knows? Maybe they did question him and he did say, brought that home for you from...
I got it at the pawn shop, baby.
Picked it up over at Fred Meyer for you, babe. Yeah. I mean, you never know.
Right.
I can't imagine this is like expensive jewelry we're talking about.
Throwing out the Northwest grocery store shopping area, Fred Meyer.
Fred Meyer, yeah.
Because that's where this is at.
It is, yeah. Well, that's where he would have gone.
I didn't
even think about it, but yeah.
You just went back.
I
remember Military Road, too, all up there.
Right, I do, too, yeah. At, so yeah, we've been... Pretty- all over this area.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we've been to all these places.
No, yeah,
we lived up there for 8 years. Yeah. So how could we not?
Right. We've tread where he's been.
Which is scary.
It's pretty wild, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, just the way that he just flippantly, and I mean, just reading these statements that he said, this was his verbatim words about it in his letter, of course, you know, but
mm-hmm.
he wrote these words. So this is how he is. This is how he felt. And it's sick. Like, he picked up prostitutes because I hate them and I didn't want to pay them for sex. Well, you're married, dude. Why'd you have to pick up prostitutes anyway? Well, you're really that unhappy with your wife? You know what I'm saying? Like, this guy is just messed up on so many levels. I don't understand.
Well, you never know. You'll never know.
Yeah. So anyway. So with this plea deal, Gary was sentenced to 48 life sentences with no possibility of parole and one life sentence to be served consecutively, which this always cracks me up when you hear they got X amount of life without parole and we're going to tack on 10 years here or 20 years there or whatever. Like, what's the difference? He's never getting out again.
I'd have to look that up. We'd have to look that up. Like, what's the proceeding? Why they do that?
Right, because like he was sentenced to the 48 life sentences, no possibility of parole, mm-hmm. one life sentence to be served consecutively, which, how many lives do you expect this man to live?
Right. And one.
He was also sentenced to an additional 10 years each for tampering with evidence, which added 480 years to his 48 life sentences.
Wow.
How old is he going to be? This is just crazy. So you're getting life, buddy, and you're never leaving.
They did 48 for every murder he committed that they knew he committed or proved.
Well, they gave him an additional 10 years for moving the bodies and right. necrophilia and right. just all the stuff that he did mm-hmm. to them.
Yeah.
They called it tampering with evidence, and they tacked on 10 years for each victim.
Yeah.
But it just never made sense to me. Like, you got a life sentence. You're never getting out.
Mm-hmm.
So he's serving his sentence in Washington State Penitentiary in Walla Walla, Washington, in solitary confinement, where he's allowed out of his cell for 1 hour a day, 4 days a week.
Man.
That is miserable.
It would be.
Which, good.
Right? Oh, I know.
I personally think that he got off easy. He didn't have an actual trial, so he was never actually, like, had to present any of his stuff in front of a jury of his peers. He avoided the death penalty when he really deserved to die instead of living off the state dime. But now he's living off taxpayers' money while families have no true closure. Mm-hmm. And, like, they didn't get to go, as far as I know, they didn't get to go to a court and watch this guy have to, you know, be held accountable for what he did to their family members.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. He got weaseled his way out.
In my opinion, he got off really easy with this plea deal.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, he's behind bars and stuff, but people never got to say goodbye to their loved ones. They missed out on years of what could have been wonderful life for these women. Just because they were prostitutes at this time doesn't mean they would have stayed that way forever. I don't know. I have mixed feelings on how this was all, ended. But he's evil. He's off the streets.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's it. That's Gary Ridgway and the Green River Killer. That's how wrapping this up.
Well, very nice. You did a great job putting this together for all of us listeners to hear and enjoy. Lord. All right, well, we hope you enjoyed this three-part series. If you listened to part three, you need to go back and listen to part one and two.
Well, hopefully they did before they listened to this one.
I hope so. I mean, unless it was, you know, let's go backwards day.
Yeah, unless, you know, you just wanted the summary. What's going on?
Maybe.
There you go.
Yeah, let's just go to three. All right, so check us out at our website at wickednesstruecrimeandtheunknown.com. Email us at wickednesstruecrime@yahoo.com and follow us on Instagram at wickednesstruecrime. Check us out on Anchor at anchor.fm/wickedness, where you can lend us your support if you feel like it by clicking on that support button. We would greatly appreciate it. And last but not least, rate, review, and subscribe to us on whatever platform you listen to our podcast on so you won't miss an episode and we can get more listeners just like you. We appreciate you guys listening and we will see you next week or maybe the week after that. I don't know.
No, it'll be next week. No one's getting COVID again.
Okay.
We're not doing this.
All right. Goodbye.
I'm sick of it. Bye.